Tired of financial surprises? Does your spouse control the purse strings, leaving you in the dark? What if they get sick? Or worse? In this episode, we'll tackle how to avoid financial disasters and empower yourself and your spouse to take control of your finances. We'll also reveal those sneaky hidden fees and trading costs that are silently draining your investment accounts. Are you ready to stop feeling lost and take charge of your financial future? Stay with us as we start right now.
And now, Money Matters USA with Fred Sage.
And you also need to work with your advisor to create multiple income streams.
You're at the right place for information every week regarding all the components of a successful retirement plan.
Asset allocation is really a driving force for how much your accounts are going to grow.
Fred Sade is a financial fiduciary and retirement specialist.
I have to put the client's interest ahead of my own pocketbook at all times. I must be able to justify why I'm making the recommendations.
Money Matters USA with Fred Sade.
We're opening with the spousal approach to retirement of today in the podcast Money Matters USA, a nationwide and worldwide podcast. Fred and I were just looking at some of the listeners we're getting in other countries as well. This is episode 141 of Money Matters USA. Fred Sade is founder and managing director of the fiduciary firm Money Matters USA. Fred in the industry for years and holding a PhD in economics from Duke University. Fred, we're going to look at couples. Definitely, there's always one with a little more interest, maybe a little more knowledge, one spouse that in the financial life. But you both have skin in the game. You both need to be on the same page. So we're going to review some good questions maybe you should ask yourselves. And like this one, do we talk enough about money?
Well, in many marriages, particularly older marriages, there's a division of labor. One spouse handles the financial investing. The other spouse handles the checkbook, pays the monthly bills, and is the social secretary for their friends and family. So there is a division of labor, and there's really no reason, when you think about it, for both of them to be duplicating each other's work. But the issue that comes up, as we were talking about in the intro, is you want the couple to at least have some broad areas of specific agreement. Let's say there's an age difference, significant age difference between the couples. Therefore, they might want to do a lot of activities in the early part of retirement that require physical exertion and travel. And they might not want to put that off until a later period of time. They may also want to agree on, do they want to support now or at a later time a particular charity, and can they agree on that? I had a couple of, the husband is deceased now, but when he was alive, they were major contributors to the Boy Scouts of America. And after he died, I asked her about what she was going to do, and she said, I'll be very honest with you. She said, I really resented all the money that we gifted to the Boy Scouts of America. She said, I have absolutely no interest in the Boy Scouts of America. I said, it's very interesting. I said, then what do you have in mind? And she said, I'm a great believer in the YMCA. And she said, since we don't have any kids, she said, I'm leaving everything to the YMCA, and I'm going to start by using our gift exemption, which we've never really maxed out. She said, I'm going to max it out in a single shot. And I said, where'd you get that idea from? And she said, well, you know, I've looked at what some people do who are quite wealthy who and are committed to a particular school or prep school, and they give a very large present value gift, and that's it. And she said, and that's exactly what I would like to do. So she then gave me specifics, and we figured it out, and she made a huge gift to the YMCA. So that's really important to, you know, be committed to, if you're charitably inclined. Now, what happens if you're not charitably inclined? There needs to be agreement on how you want to spend the money. If there's no interest in charity, and let's say you've decided that you're not going to give any money to your kids. You've given them all the money that you're going to give them while you're alive. Or maybe you don't have any kids, or maybe you want to leave money to your grandkids. You want to skip a generation. Well, then, you know, there's planning techniques that you can use for generation skipping trusts, and those could be funded out with the skip. But there needs to be an agreement on what it is you want to do, and you also need to loop in your advisor. And you also need to loop in a competent CPA and a competent tax attorney. And all of this needs to be done in advance. People don't realize that there's a shortage of CPAs. There's also a shortage of tax attorneys. There's also, frankly, a shortage of advisors. I mean, all of these professions are on the older side. The average CPA age is about 62. So for people who, you know, delay, or people who are still sitting on the fence, even though the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is set to expire in 2026, now is really the time to not only make your plans, but to hire a competent CPA and tax attorney to get the work done. Because there's a shortage of them, and because there is a shortage of them, the work gets stacked up. So if you wait until late into 2025, wait for the election results, if you will, it's going to be too late. You will not find a competent specialist available. There just aren't enough of them anymore. So make these make these fundamental changes by agreement between the two of you, and then implement them. And then if it needs a tuck or a tweak or what have you, well, that can be done on an annual review. And if you change your mind on something, it may be possible to make some changes. But these are the kinds of things that you need to work with your spouse, work with your advisor, and the advisor should be the central coordinator for these efforts. You need to have a coordinator. If you had a health problem, you'd have one doctor who is the coordinator, and he or she would then tell you which specialist you would go to. And they would decide what tests and so on. And somebody has to be the policeman, the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you need here.
No doubt. Because communication is necessary. There's going to be some disagreement in many areas. And knowledge on the part of both is necessary. Having that ownership. Because so many things will be different, like risk, Fred. And you come in as the coordinator there sometimes.
Oh, yes.
Every time.
Well, recently, a couple we're working with right now, we did an evaluation on their investment portfolios. And in 2008... some of his positions would have lost or did lose over 70% And we got to the overall loss ratio on their portfolios. A lot of them are joint portfolios, and her stuff is very similar to his. And the wife was absolutely stunned at the amount of risk and the amount of loss if we have another repeat of 2008. And she said to him, I had no earthly idea about this. How could you take this much risk with our money, given that we're 2 years away from retirement? And he said, I honestly did not know that I was taking this much risk. And I'm just learning now from the analysis that I did for them. It's important when we have a potential client come on board, we do a risk tolerance and risk capacity. We put them through the psychometric testing. And we also retest all of our clients. It depends, every 2 to 5 years, depending on how active they're trading and also on what's going on through the various scenario analyses that we're doing to see how much risk is in the portfolios. And remember, risk is not the same as volatility. You're always going to get drawdowns. We have one going on today. We had one last Friday. At one point, the market last Friday was down 400 points. And we have the market going down right now. It was up this morning, and now it's going down. I mean, when you are looking at volatility, you can think of the simplest way to think of volatility is think of it as a teeter-totter, seesaw. Goes up, it goes down. It's something that's going to happen pretty regularly. But at some point, usually at 20%, we get correction. But correction doesn't have to stop at 20%. So then we want to look at risk and what is involved in risk is very different than what is involved in volatility. Without spending, not getting too deep in the drill down, risk has to have three components. It has to have uncertainty, exposure, and there has to be a hazard, and something that's hazardous to your financial health. So once we know what your risk tolerance and risk capacity are, and then we can use realistic scenarios that are forward-looking and not backward-looking. When you drive your car, you're looking through the front windshield. You got a rearview mirror. You look at it occasionally, but for the most part, more than 90% of the time, you're looking through the front windshield. That's how you drive. And so once you understand how much risk is involved, then you have to say, look, what happened? Let's stress test this, and we'll look at the scenarios. Let's say that with your portfolios, I'll make this very easy. Let's say the drawdown is 53% if we repeat 2008. Well, in order to get back to your starting line where you started, you need 112% gain. That assumes no taxes, no withdrawals, and no fees whatsoever. That's a big lift. That's going to take 5 to 8 years to get that kind of recovery. And while that's going on, you're not making any gains, because the reason I say 5 to 8 years is because you may start to get a recovery and then you get another drawdown and you have to climb back up again. So it's like, let's say you're climbing up a ladder and at some point you lose your footing and you come down 2, 3, 4 rungs and you got to start again to get back up. Well, you didn't get to the top of wherever it is you're trying to get to, But so you accomplish nothing. It just simply takes you have nothing to show for it. You have no gain whatsoever until you recover. So it's important that both spouses agree on what the risk tolerance and risk capacity is going to show. Now, one spouse may prefer a slightly more conservative approach. A spouse may prefer an aggressive approach. Now, frankly, in our red light on the dashboard process, what we're going to say and what we do say is, look it, you've got this 1, 2, 3 positions that you are absolutely in love with. Manage them yourself, because I don't want any responsibility for them. I will look in on them from time to time and see how you're doing. But if you have a gain, pat yourself on the back. It's, you did it. If you have a loss, right. I didn't do it. You did. These were your choices. I want nothing to do with anything that has that kind of loss. We want to stay within the 5 to 10% loss range, because it's easy to manage that, because the recovery is very quick. And if you are retired and you have no more fresh capital coming in, you're living on that financial capital that you built up over your entire lifetime, working lifetime. And therefore, you cannot afford catastrophic losses. So we will manage to be within that 5 to 10% loss range. But anything outside of that, if you want those positions or position or a particular stock or whatever it is, manage it yourself. Mm-hmm. We're not looking to control all your money. Just open up a trading account at whatever you prefer and manage it. And I'll look at it from time to time, and that's it.
Right.
Now, there's nothing wrong with both spouses having different risk profiles and different risk capacities. What they have to agree on is how the money is going to be used. They don't need to agree on their spending objectives and on their goals for the money. It's more helpful, obviously, if they do. But if they have different views, then that's fine. We have to see how to reconcile them, if that's possible. This is a bigger challenge, by the way, in second marriages, because each spouse is coming in with their own money and their own retirement plans, and they may have a joint account for household expenses, and they may have a joint investment account. But that's their joint investment account is never going to be heavily funded, because each of them is going to continue to do their own thing. So you have to take that into consideration. And also, the other thing you have to take into consideration is the death of a spouse and what changes need to be made in those portfolios. Now, you know, we have two studies now. Each study, the second study by Corbridge, confirms the first study, and what the two studies show us, and the Corbridge is the latest one. It shows that people are more afraid of running out of money than of dying. Hmm. So this is not something that we should ignore. Because people are very concerned, and that gets us to, how to manage these portfolios. It's not that difficult to de-risk portfolios, but you do have to give something up, mm-hmm. in order to limit the drawdown. So if you're going to limit the drawdown, you're going to have to limit the upside. And I have some slides which I use, usually in the second or third meeting, which shows how I compare a fixed index annuity with someone who has a 100% equity portfolio. In other words, they get 100% of the upside and they get 100% of the downside. And I even use a very old, doesn't exist anymore, a 6% cap S&P product. And, you know, those products don't exist anymore because the cap, where you do have a cap, they're much higher today. You know, 65% would be a typical cap today. And what I, over a 10-year period, I can show that even at that 6% cap on the S&P, it's going to outperform the uncapped S&P type portfolio over a 10-year period. And that's just not an exaggeration. The drawdowns, the corrections are deal killers, and you get a correction in the S&P every 5 years, and you get a drawdown about every 2.5 to 3 years, and so you're back climbing the ladder again, and the fixed index annuity doesn't have that problem because you're being protected, your principal is being protected. So it's perfectly valid to substitute a fixed index annuity for bonds if you don't want to use bonds, because we've had a lot of we've experienced a number of times in the last decade where stocks and bonds act in the same way. So bonds are not acting as that buffer to absorb the risk of equities.
How important are records? It seems like that it's a dual purpose to keeping good records, efficiency, and to assist the surviving spouse.
It's very important to help the surviving spouse, especially if the surviving spouse was not the financial spouse. And
right.
Oftentimes the surviving spouse has absolutely no idea of what the investments were, how much risk is involved in those investments. The husband did everything. Don't talk to her, talk to me. Is sometimes the attitude that they will have. And I have had widows bring in one or two rolling suitcases with unopened statements.
Oh, wow.
And then they'll say, what do you want me to do with this?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and what I will say to them is, give me the oldest statement and the newest statement, and shred everything else.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it's qualified money.
Mm-hmm.
If it's non-qualified money, then I got a bigger problem. I need the original statement, and then I need, if they've made any changes, changed the platform that they're using, changed the advisor, stockbroker. I have to, because you need to know basis. In those also, if they're Roth accounts, have to know if their contributions that they've been making, or have they done a rollover to establish a much larger Roth account and 401ks. I mean, it becomes a nightmare. I usually wind up with one of those big black lawn bags, you know, those leaf bags, those monsters, and I usually then throw the statements in there, usually with some rubber bands around them, and then I have one of my people go through those statements, you know, just as a doctor has a physician's assistant you go to see the doctor. You don't see the doctor first. Physician assistant comes in, asks you a bunch of questions, inputs data, checks everything, takes your blood pressure, your height, your weight, and so on, and says the doc, why are you here? And then the doctor will come in 20 minutes later. Sorry, my other appointment ran over, et cetera, et cetera. We've all had that experience. But the point is that I need to get that thing queued up for me so I can see what it is that we're looking at. Now, there are people who will insist that I do it, and if I do, then I have to charge them for the time at my billing rate. But mm-hmm. some people insist that they want me to do it. So that's fine. It's not an issue. But I think the real issue is if both spouses are alive, you have to establish a good, solid, sound working relationship, and you need to talk to both spouses, because oftentimes the non-money spouse will have ideas that they've never expressed before. And I've heard spouse say, husband say to wife, "Oh, I never knew you felt that way." Oh. And I've heard a wife say, "Well, you never asked me. How did you know?" So, well, that, yeah, but you really have to have establish a good relationship.
Yeah, no doubt.
One other thing that, and this recently happened also, where a couple came in. I won't go through the whole story, but a couple came in, and they were referred to me by clients who I've been working with for over 30 years. And they said, "Well, that's why we're here, because they really sing your praises. We've talked to 7 other people, including a CPA and a tax attorney, and what we've decided is we're going to split it 50-50. And I said, "Listen, whether you hire me or you don't hire me, don't split anything. Decide who you're going to work with, mm-hmm. and only work with one person. If you work with more than one person, you're going to be in trouble."
Oh, yeah. I could see that, definitely.
Yeah, another thing that we do is we give people a record book, if you will, and that allows them to fill out everything, place to indicate where your tax records are, where your will, your trust, your power of attorney, your advance directive, your living will, where all your your utilities are, everything, your property taxes, your sewer taxes, your electric bills, gas bills, everything. And everything is in one place, so they don't have to tear, the house or your condo or your apartment apart in order to find all these records. The other thing is you should provide what you want. In terms of a funeral, do you want to be cremated? Do you want a modest funeral? Do you want sky's the limit in a mausoleum? Mm-hmm. What is it that you want? And that should be written out clearly. And also, your advance directive, your living will, ought to spell out what it is you want. You don't want arguments among the family. This is what mom would have wanted.
Right.
This is not what mom. And also, who is going to be the point person for the family? Is it going to be one of the sons? Is it going to be a daughter? Who is going to be the point person? And you need to agree on that in advance and stick to it. So that you don't have the worst thing that we've all seen in visiting a hospital. The family is there, and they're all arguing and screaming and yelling at one another. And the doctors just shrug their shoulders and say, "To hell with this. We're just going to do what we think is necessary because you don't know what you want, and we can't stand out here and wait for you to come to a decision."
No, it's got to be frustrating.
Also, one other thing that we've been reading about recently is financial infidelity, and that is that one of the other spouses has credit cards, has bills, has a secret checking account where they haven't been honest with the other spouse about their spending habits. Does the spouse need counseling? To control the need to spend, the need to buy, the need to run up debt. We really need to know. And we try to get people to fill out the book that we give them. Some of them never do, but some do. Some fill out enough of it that. And there's also another thing that we're all aware of, is that people of a certain age don't want their kids to know what they have. And, and sometimes that leads to difficult conversations. But, there's an old saying that anybody that's in the financial services business has has heard, which is if you don't spend your money, your kids will spend it for you.
Yeah, no doubt. And communication is critical. And if you are married and approaching retirement, and Fred can come in and be that facilitator, coordinator, keeping emotions in check too. He's not a marriage counselor, but he has, no. Over the years, he has helped many, many, many couples, as well as single people getting to retirement. And so if you want to reach out to Fred, it's 800-593-8188. As I mentioned, we have podcast listeners all over the country. So wherever you are, you can schedule to meet with Fred. No cost, no obligation, comprehensive review, 800-593-8188. Well, you know, we know what we're doing leading up to retirement. We're saving, but we really know what's going on behind the scenes with our money. Are financial termites eating away at our hard-earned savings? When we come back, Fred's going to outline several strategies that could help stretch those retirement dollars, coming up on Money Matters USA.
Many of us look forward to the day we retire. We look forward to having more time to spend with our families, enjoying every day, and maybe even taking that dream vacation out on the open road. Don't let the fear of uncertainty turn your retirement dream into a retirement nightmare. We can help you see how much risk you're taking, those potential red flags that could cause problems for you down the road, such as tax liability, as well as a big one, folks. How much are you paying in fees or commissions with your current plan or advisor? Contact Fred Sade at Money Matters USA, 800-593-8188, 800-593-8188.
Talk about fees, or open up this segment of Money Matters USA looking at fees and how when you meet with someone like Fred, a fiduciary, experienced, wise in the financial arena and focusing on retirement planning, when you meet with someone like Fred, you may be surprised. You may find out fees you weren't even aware of. What would some of those fees be that, or some of those financial termites you uncover, Fred?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to answer your question. Let me just step back for 1 second.
Okay.
We use software, and the software can see into whatever your investment is. Now, it doesn't matter. It's ETF, mutual fund, managed portfolio, 401k. Unless they're very narrow, proprietary funds, and we have to guess at that, which we can do realistically. So our software is going to tell us how much you're actually paying. Now, most people, as you pointed out, really only look at the advisor fee. And so you ask them, well, what are you paying? My advisor charges me X, 1%, 1.25%, 1.5%. That's what I'm paying. No, it's not what you are paying. First of all, you're going to have to deal with the every fund has an expense ratio. And ETFs trade less often than mutual funds. So when you buy an ETF, you have less concern, not only from an expense ratio, but also less concern about being forced out with capital gains and having phantom income, which is more likely on a mutual fund that trades more frequently. The expense ratio is just taking the value of your investment in that fund, and you then divide that by the known charge, and that will then give you what the expense ratio is. Now, you may have a lot of different investments, a lot of different positions, and so we can calculate that number. Now, the advisor fee, the sales commission, okay, those have to be disclosed. But there are additional fees that may not be disclosed. And there are management fees that are inside the funds. There are trading fees inside the funds. There are transactional fees inside the funds. Those are disclosed in the prospectus. If you read the prospectus carefully, you will see all those fees are disclosed, but they are not disclosed on your statement. So our software is, once we put in, you know, ABC widgets, okay, our software will see into ABC widgets and will then come up with all of the expenses, all the fees, all the charges. Now, there's another charge that most people are not familiar with, and that's cash drag. So what's cash drag? Well, cash drag is, in fact, that no fund can be 100% invested all the time. They'll tell you that you should be 100% invested, but they can't be. Why? Well, there are redemptions every day. Don't they have to have cash on hand to meet the redemptions? Also, they may have made some investments and they're waiting for new money to come in. So they have to sit there with some cash in order to be able to transact. Well, the fact that that money is sitting there in cash is costing return. And that loss of return is called cash drag. That's not disclosed on your statement, but our software can measure the cash drag on a mutual fund or an ETF or whatever is in your 401k plan. And as I said, if it's a very narrow proprietary product, we may not be able to dig in and find it, because sometimes those products can be extremely opaque, and sometimes we just can't get past that. Sometimes we can, but that's one of the areas where it can get tricky. Most people just underestimate. This is constant. They underestimate what they are paying, and it usually comes as a revelation to them once you show them what they are paying, and then on top of what their probability of loss is based on realistic scenario planning. Will they be hurt? Will they gain? This is all very important. I don't want to get into Monte Carlo stuff, because we use Monte Carlo, but we don't live or die with Monte Carlo. We use it to show how realistic under different circumstances it could be, based on 25,000 iterations. Most people only do, most of the piece software that's out there only does 2,000 iterations. I don't know that helps anybody by doing that. Once you realistically know what you're looking at and you are getting ready to retire, or you are retired, you are faced with the fact that you have a finite amount of money. And so it's very, very important as to how much money you want to put at risk of loss. And that's where capping the amount of risk so you can get that recovery, it becomes vitally important. So and being able to reduce fees is important. Now, let me be brutally honest here. It may be that your position is such and your goals are such that there is a divergence between your risk, between your goals and what has to happen in order to allow you to meet those goals. Assuming you are committed to those goals, that this is exactly what you want, this is what you want your money to do for you, it is possible that we may actually have to increase the fees, not because we're greedy, but because you are committed to a particular set of goals, and you are committed to what you want your money to do for you, how you want your money to behave, and what your money should realistically accomplish for you. And so for the most part, 95% of the time, we can reduce the fees. There is that 5% where we can't reduce the fees, where it might actually have to increase fees. But I think that an advisor who has your best interest at heart will show that to you, and you have to decide where you want to go from there. But you may find that, yeah, this is what I want, and if it costs me a little bit more to get there, then that's, you know, then that's the way it's going to be.
Well, and looking as far as working forward with people, how often do you need to update their strategies?
I would say an annual review would be desirable. For some people, it might be semi-annual. Depending on what the positions are, you may have to do some realignment. It could be annual. It might not be. It's also important to know what your risk tolerance and risk capacity is. Mm-hmm. I know that, and we've all heard the rule of thumb: stay invested all the time because the market comes back eventually. There's truth in that, but you know what? Sometimes it's better to just go to cash. So there's a study by Blanchett, and the study is focused on what happened. Should you go to cash? Should you stay invested? And what's the outcome? And you know what? Going to cash and missing the best days isn't the end of the world. You'll still come out pretty well. And staying in the market and having to climb back is not necessarily the best alternative. And this is very recent research. Most of the recent research is focused on variable spending patterns and on the impact of taxation and spending patterns, and also on this whole issue of whether or not you stay invested. So this is the latest academic research, and the other thing is variable spending patterns is also something that's being heavily researched right now. So it's this is different than what we used to think, and there's also a study that just came out a couple of weeks ago on Social Security claiming strategies, and is the type of advisor you are, does that bias your Social Security advice? And if anybody wants a link to that study, I can give them the URL for that. I think it's very, very important.
Well, it's a lot to consider in retirement planning, and that is why Fred is available to talk to you after learning you and how you see your retirement. How do you want to live in your retirement? What do you bring to the table? What he can suggest as a fiduciary strategies that would be in your best interest. Fred also invites you to visit his website, and that is moneymattersusa.net. He was talking earlier about the red light on the dashboard program and all that is involved with that, and of course implemented in a custom fashion. You can learn about it. Click the red light tab at moneymattersusa.net. Click podcast and hear the other 140 podcasts. Yeah. We have a description on those too. So listen at your leisure, moneymattersusa.net. It's available right there at the website. You click podcast. You also get the drop down for Stump the Guru. So that's a good way to get a question in to Fred for the podcast. And if you stump him, he makes it worth your while. And it's another way to schedule with Fred at moneymattersusa.net. Also, the number 800-593-8188, 800-593-8188. Thanks so much for staying with us on this journey we call Money Matters USA.
Investment advisory services offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. Fred Sade and his guests provide general information, not individually targeted personalized advice, and are not liable for the usage of information discussed. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles should not be considered investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell in any of these financial vehicles. This information should also not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with a professional specializing in the fields of tax, legal, accounting, or investments regarding the applicability of this information for their situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to the securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company and are offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. By contacting Money Matters USA, you may be provided information regarding the purchase of insurance products.